burning as best as it could. We didn't need to burn the whole forest down accidentally. Of course, we weren't out of danger yet. The stench of the rift was still pungent in my nostrils. It was nearby, and there would likely be more monsters waiting. "We need to move," I told the others. "There may still be monsters around the rift. We need to kill them if we can." They nodded, their metal faces determined. Once my imp was finished putting out the fires as best it could, we continued on. Once we left the edge of the charred woods, I recalled the bullet bath so that it hovered over us and dropped the metal skin that coated us. Things weren't going to be easy for the fight that was sure to come, especially if I had to use the bullet bath on all three of us for the whole time.
"I wish there was a way to contact someone," Layla said. "Request a response squad."
"This is too remote for the military to bother with," I reminded her. "They would get in contact with freelancers if there were any near enough to do something about it."
"So what are we supposed to do then?" Brayden asked.
I set my jaw and lengthened my stride. "We'll hold off any invading monsters for as long as we can, until help arrives, or the portal closes on its own. That's what we've been trained to do." We marched on through the woods and hiked up a brief rise. As we rose, the smell of the rift got thicker, so bad that it assaulted my nostrils and made me want to gag. But that meant we were close at least. When we crested the rise, my suspicions were confirmed, when I saw the rift and a small clearing between a few clusters of trees. Layla and Brayden both gasped at the sight of it. The portal was about the size of a regular door. The swirly, inking blackness of it a darker blue than the last portal I had seen. A few ghouls and axe goblins milled about the perimeter of it, no doubt confused as to why there was nothing to kill and eat. The moment we came into view, their attention snapped to us. I was proud to say that Brayden took the lead. Whether he was fully over his fear of monsters or not was unclear, but he didn't let it deter him at all. Though he was strained from summoning the Ember Eagle, he fished another crystal from his pack and tossed it as we advanced down the hill. With a flash, a troll appeared, large and hulking, its deep gray arms covered in rough armored hide. It was only a basic gray D-monster, but it would take care of some ghouls. I tossed out a fire imp to help the troll out, and together, they made quick work of the fodder. Layla came up next to us and blew out a breath.
"That was easy."
"It isn't over yet," I said solemnly, and recalled my imp. Hopefully the Chatteroshi were the brunt of this attack, but we can't know that for sure. Brayden recalled his troll as he took in deep breaths.
"How long can rifts stay open?"
"That was on the exam, Brayden," I chuckled, an eyebrow raised. He shrugged.
"I suppose I missed that question. I hope you didn't miss too many."
I shook my head with a smile. "Rifts can stay open all day, but they won't produce a continuous stream of monsters, though. Monsters are hurt by moonlight. So once the sun goes down, the rift will close."
"Well, I knew those last bits."
He scratched his neck.
"Good."
I crossed my arms and kept my eyes square on the rift. "So while this rift will close naturally, it could take a whole day or more, depending on its strength."
"And we don't know how long this one has already been open for,"
Layla added.
"Exactly,"
Brayden grumbled.
"I see a problem then."
"Right. How long could we realistically hold the monsters back without help? That probably wouldn't come. We were already growing tired from using our stronger monsters. Lasting a day simply wasn't a realistic option." Just then, the rift rippled and began to glow, expanding ever so slightly to accommodate the passage of a larger monster. The rift at Raylorstead had grown to the size of a house, so that the immense fire eye could come through and wreak havoc on the poor little town. Thankfully, this one only grew a few feet taller and wider. That still wasn't good, but it was just a little bit better. With a whooshing sound, the rift glowed even brighter, and our next enemy came through. It was a yellow basilisk, and it would be a handful. The yellow basilisk was smaller than its more famous greener cousin, who can petrify its prey with a single glance. But the yellow variety was far faster and could spit acidic venom. I wasn't sure if the metal coating from a bullet bass would be of much help against acid or not, but it wasn't wise to test that out in these conditions. The monster reared back and lunged at us, fast as lightning. I tackled Layla out of the way as it struck, while Brayden dodged in the opposite direction with a yelp. The basilisk's mouth sank into the ground where we'd stood, but thankfully, it found nothing but dirt and leaves. The basilisk didn't waste time. It looked right at us, and as it reared back to spit acid at me, I called up a Wallerden and reinforced it with bullet bass metal. Acid splashed across the metallic wall with a loud hiss and bubble, and the normally indomitable Wallerden screeched with pain. If I hadn't made it metal, the vicious acid would have already eaten through it, but even so, it wouldn't protect us for long.
"We need to regroup,"
I grunted and led the way toward the nearest cluster of trees. Layla and Brayden fell in behind me as the Wallerden held the basilisk off for a few more seconds. We dove behind them right when the basilisk struck again, sending my monster back to my crystal. At least in the tight wood, the massive snake would have a harder time maneuvering to get us. It'd give us a moment to at least figure out a real plan. I turned my gaze to Layla, whose eyes were wide from the rush of adrenaline and fear.
"Do you think you could summon your hippocrans?" I asked her.
She shook her head.
"I'm exhausted. I can summon it, but I can't promise how well I can control it."
Fair enough. I couldn't ask Brayden to use his Ember Eagle again either. He was probably also too drained for it. Plus, its attack would kill us, too. I doubted I had the strength to shield us from its blast a second time. My Kalgori was an option, but my control of it in a confined space like this would be questionable at best. As we hid behind cover, the basilisk seemed content to stalk us. It slithered around the copse of trees as caustic drool spilled from its fangs and hissed as it hit the forest floor. Time was not on our side. It would either start spraying acid to eat away our limited cover, or simply wait us out until more monsters spilled out of the rift.
"What do you know about these things?" Brayden asked, as tired-looking as Layla was. "I remember that they are fast, and we all saw the acid spit. But do they have any weaknesses?"
Layla shrugged helplessly, but more things came to mind from the extra books Arwen had me study. "They have thick scales that are proof against most piercing and cutting implements. Electricity, too," I remembered. "But its hide is still flexible. Hard bludgeoning force could still crush it."
"But it's too fast to bury under Walladins,"
Layla pointed out, no doubt as she thought of one of the techniques I'd used against Gawain in our duel.
"Not that they would last long against that acid. And daggadillas and ex-goblins are right out."
"If only we could slow it down," Brayden mused.
And that sparked a crazy idea in my head.
"I have a plan, but it's risky," I began as I dug crystals out of my bandolier.
"Do you have any grunts left you can summon safely? I don't care what it is. Just something to distract it, and more importantly, keep it in the center of the clearing."
"I've got some box trolls left,"
Layla chimed in, while Brayden pulled out a couple of crystals I recognized as daggerdillos.
"It's not much, Grief, but we'll do all we can."
I nodded.
"Go for it. This hopefully won't take long."
As we split up, I stepped back a bit more into the woods to let my friends unleash their distraction. Both Layla and Brayden let fly with their grunts, and their crystals burst into a cadre of trolls and daggerdillos. Eager to fight after the paws in its hunt, the basilisk dove right into them. As expected, the daggerdillo's spike attacks bounced harmlessly off its thick hide, but they still annoyed the basilisk. It would have torn the summons to shreds, but the box trolls did a perfect job with their great strength and bulk in protecting their smaller kin. Not that they would delay the basilisk for long, but they wouldn't have to, as I summoned all of my cement trolls and sent them to work climbing up the trees. The only problem was that I'd have to run around the whole area to get them in position. The snake monster was smart, very smart, but it couldn't see everything. With my friend's small horde of monsters keeping it busy, the basilisk didn't see me scurrying up the trees and get into position all around the thing. All I needed was to lure it back within range of the trolls. As the last of my friend's trolls fell to the basilisk's fangs, I ran back into the clearing, past where Layla and Brayden were controlling their monsters from cover, and drew a speed slug as I ran.
"Griff!"
Layla cried after me, but I called back at them both.
"Dismiss the rest of your monsters now!"
Without a second thought, Brayden and Layla did precisely that. It was said that basilisks weren't exceptionally smart for monsters, so it was confused by the dismissal of goblins and daggerdillas that had just been in front of it, exactly as I'd hoped. I took advantage of that confusion to run into the clearing and grab the creature's attention. As it spun to try to race after my speed slug-enhanced self, I darted into the copse of trees where I'd hidden the cement trolls. I let out a howl of rage as it slithered toward me. Only as it passed under the trees, I commanded my cement trolls to spew cement all over the snake. It worked beautifully. The basilisk writhed as it tried to slip away from the torrent of fast-hardening concrete, but it was stuck to the forest floor. I spun on my heel, grabbed my wallardens, and then flung them into the air above the creature. As they appeared above the basilisk, they dropped one after another atop the cement-laden monster. It screeched in pain as the heavy wallardens smashed it flat as a pancake. In its death throes, the basilisk shot out acid, but it couldn't turn its neck because it was pinned, so the acid flew harmlessly in front of it, with me way out of harm's way. Regardless, it was over. All I had to do was summon a final wallarden and drop it on the basilisk's head. It would probably die from the damage the others had done, but I didn't want to wait for that. It was time to end it. As I summoned that wallarden and put the struggling basilisk out of its misery, a woman with a long cloak broke free of the forest beside me, and when she saw the dead basilisk, her eyes went wide.
"Damn it!"
she cried as she sprinted for the dead basilisk.
"Hey, what are you doing?"
I yelled in surprise. The creature was dead, but if she got too close, she might still get hurt by the acid leaking from its mouth. I got my answer. She thrust her hands out in front of her, and a stream of cold mist solidified in front of her. She was an ice mage. The woman created icy steps in front of her, leading to the basilisk's thrashing head. When she was high enough, she launched herself from the makeshift steps. In mid-air, and to my amazement, she conjured a glimmering double-bearded ice axe. She used gravity to add tremendous force to the blow as she brought the axe downward onto the basilisk and lopped its head off in a single blow before it could fully disintegrate. The woman slung the axe over her shoulder and bent down to pluck one of the fangs from the basilisk's open mouth. It took her a moment to wriggle it free, but eventually it came loose with a sickening pop. She held it up in front of her face, examining it, then put it in the pack at her hip.
"These are very hard to find, and worth a pretty penny," she said, assumedly to me. "Sometimes they dissolve with the monster, if you don't take the head off."
She smiled as she put her axe against her shoulder.
"And the head is almost impossible to take off while they're alive. Afterward, well, old Bessie here can do the job just fine."
She glanced lovingly at the ice axe.
"That's what I call her. My axe, I mean."
Good to know," I replied as I filed that information away. The woman turned to me fully and flashed me a smile. If I had to guess, she was probably a few years older than me. Her skin was sun-kissed and glowing beneath her armor. Deep chocolate eyes gave me a long look, and wide lips curled into a warm smile. She had a pointy face, sharp cheekbones, and a beaky nose. Her hair was tremendously thick and coarse, tied back in elaborate braids that curled over her shoulder and down her collar. But I had the feeling she looked at me as predators did to their prey.
"That was some reckless plan, Summoner, but ballsy."
Her smile grew wider.
"I like it."
I smiled back and scratched my neck at a loss. "Thanks, ma'am." She scoffed.
"Don't call me ma'am. I'm hardly older than you."
She offered me her hand.
"Ashla, member of the Wild Reds."
"I'm Griff," I said, and shook her hand. My brow arched high. "The Wild Reds?"
"We're a freelancer company."
I perked up. "Oh, so you have a banisher to close the rift?" As if waiting for that question to be asked, the ground began to rumble. I looked past her to the rift just in time to see it blink out of existence. Ashla didn't bother to look back at it. She kept on smiling.
"We do have a banisher, and it seems the boys did their job."
She turned and looked at the scorched grass where the portal had been.
"They've been in there for hours, and I know a few waves came through before we got here."
She glanced at the remains of the basilisk once more.
"It was my team's job to keep the monsters from spilling out, but that one got by us in the last rush, so I came out here to get it."
She grinned.
"Seems I needn't have bothered."
Brayden and Layla finally made their way over the fallen trees and the decayed monster to us. Layla was excited, her eyes lit up. She threw her arm around my shoulder and pulled me close with a wide, toothy grin.
That was brilliant, Griff!
Yeah, Brayden echoed. A little reckless, but it worked.
I smirked. Well, you know me. Ashla folded her arms and appraised my friends, her eyes narrow, and a sly smirk played across her lips.
Your mages too, eh?
She asked, her smirk more bemused now. My friends nodded and introduced themselves.
We're summoners like him, said Layla. I'm Layla.
And I'm Brayden, he added. Say, that's a mighty fine axe you have there.
Oh, I'm quite proud of it,
she said as she shot me a grin.
I'm Ashla, by the way.
Ashla shook their hands.
A pleasure, I'm sure. What are you all doing this far out in the middle of nowhere?
We were traveling along the road, I said, and turned to point back in the direction we'd come from. We heard screaming coming from within, so we came to investigate. My face dropped. We never found the woman who was screaming. Layla and Brayden both hung their heads as if they'd just remembered the reason we'd come into the forest. Ashla frowned too, and shook her head solemnly. She pointed south.
There was a woman who lived in a small cottage not too far away, she said. She'd been out picking berries when my company passed her earlier. One of my team managed to help her in time. Don't worry.
Layla smiled.
That's great. It is,
Ashla replied. She gave us an encouraging smile.
Also, on behalf of my company, we appreciate your help with the basilisk.
She extended her hand out to me. I shook it. It was no trouble.
I wouldn't say it was no trouble. We did nearly die, snorted Layla.
Well, I mean, that's just part of the job, I said with a shrug. Layla punched my arm and smiled.
I suppose so.
Ashla snickered.
Glad to see summoners take up the call to action.
With that, she tightened the straps of her pack and pulled down the hood of her cloak. She gave us an exaggerated bow.
You should join up with a freelance company. The money's good, and you get to help people that the military doesn't have the resources to.
I gave her a wide smile.
Maybe we will.
Good.
Then she turned on her heels and started to walk off.
Safe travels, you tree.
She glanced back at us.
Feel free to take the remains from the basilisk. I'd say you earned it.
And then she disappeared through a thicket of trees and down the gradually sloping terrain. We watched her go. What a very interesting woman. Her, along with Lieutenant Jovic from Arwen's class, really made me consider becoming a freelancer once my years of military service were over. Brayden blew out a breath.
Well, that was something.
Yeah, it was, said Layla.
We should go find our horses,
Brayden added with a stretch of his arms. I nodded.
Yeah, I'd hate to not get any of our deposit back for them. Maybe selling the loot from the basilisk will pay for that if we're unlucky.
Layla snickered as we started back for the road. We laughed, our merry sounds echoing through the trees.
Chapter 21. A day later, we made it back to the Enclave and arrived back at the academy by carriage around dinner time. We weren't the only ones arriving either. There was a flood of other carriages and students on horseback coming in. With school starting back up in only a couple of days, it was time to come back and get settled. I was bone tired as I dragged my things back to my dorm along with Brayden, though he looked like he could still run a mile. Meanwhile, I wanted to lie down and take a nap, but my stomach rumbled so loudly I knew I couldn't sleep. So I followed Brayden to the dining hall. After a week and a half of smaller tavern meals, I was ready to feast. The academy didn't scrimp on the banquet for their students' return. Today was a feast. There were a dozen roasted turkeys, carved up and ready, divided by white and dark meat, and glazed with gravy. My stomach growled, and I swear I had to keep myself from salivating. There was corn on the cob, as well as ribeye, and steamed broccoli with a side of melted cheese. I spied piping hot apple cobbler for dessert, but I would get some later. Once I got my food, I retrieved a large pint of ale and went to join my friends. As I neared our usual table, Layla and Brayden were already digging into their food, but my eyes found Nia sitting alone in her usual spot. She wasn't reading or anything, though. Instead, her eyes were locked onto me, which made my heart thud loudly. Layla must have noticed where I was staring, because she tossed a piece of broccoli at me with a wide smile.
You don't have to eat with us every day, you know, she said. We've spent enough quality time together anyways.
She gave me a wink.
Brayden agrees.
What? I asked, an eyebrow raised.
Go sit with Nia, Griff,
she said, this time more forcefully.
Brayden and I are more than willing to share your friendship.
She smirked at me then, her cheeks a bit flushed.
And you know I don't mind sharing other things as well.
Brayden took a gulp of wine and gave me an incredulous look, before he shook his head and shrugged.
I don't know how you manage, Griff, but I'm envious as hell. Now go.
See, Brayden agrees.
Layla smiled, then shoved a large slab of gravy-coated turkey into her mouth. She nodded her head toward Nia.
Go to her, my sweet prince.
You're ridiculous, I told her with a shake of my head. She snorted in response and tried not to choke on her food as she laughed. I rolled my eyes and made my way over to where Nia sat. She watched me all the way until I sat down across from her. It was as if her eyes had craved the image of me, and now she couldn't get enough. That was probably ridiculous, but it would have been nice if that were in fact true.
Hey there, m'lady,
I said with a smile and scooped some broccoli with my fork, dipped it into the cheese, and plopped it into my mouth. Amazing.
Ugh, please do not call me that. I had to listen to servants call me that all holiday,
Nia scoffed and rubbed at her temples in frustration.
Sometimes I wonder if they can even say my name.
I'm sorry, Nia, I said with sincere sympathy. While her family troubles were different from mine, Layla's or Brayden's, they were just as valid. I promise I won't call you that again, she smiled thankfully.
Thank you, Griff.
Her voice was strained, and that made me take a longer, closer look at her as I chewed on a chunk of perfectly salted meat. Her half-lidded eyes were red, like she hadn't slept for days, and overall, she was a tad ragged, beautiful still, but tired. I understood the feeling, since I'd been on the road for the last 3 days, but she struck me as worse off than myself. Are you okay, Nia?
I'm fine,
she replied with a huff and a shrug of her shoulders.
Just dealing with my family is stressful, as I have told you.
Anything in particular this time? I asked with a thoughtful frown. Her eyes shifted away from me, her cheeks flushed, and she almost looked ashamed.
We got into an argument. I'll spare you the details, but I said some things I wish I had not. Then I left on horseback and rode all the way back here.
She sighed and buried her head in her arms.
Father will be furious the next time he sees me.
I'm sorry, Nia, I repeated and leaned forward a bit. It wasn't an empty platitude, though, as I added, is there anything I can do to help? Just name it, and I'll do my best. That perked a momentary smile out of her.
If only you could, farm boy. But I'm afraid this isn't something you can punch or summon a Walloden on top of. Still, the sentiment is sweet. Thank you.
I returned that smile as I took a sip of ale. You're welcome, but I think you underestimate the problems I can fix. She laughed faintly and began to pick at her food now, a good sign in my eyes. So how far did you ride from?
Hartmire Enclave.
I almost choked on my turkey.
You rode on horseback from Hartmire?
I asked, wide-eyed and flabbergasted.
That's a 7-day ride!
Nia sat back and looked at her turkey mournfully.
I made it in 6. I rode Priscilla Hart.
That's not much better, Nia.
I shook my head, amazed that she was still alive.
And you rode here alone?
I did.
She frowned.
And before you try to chastise me, I can handle myself just fine. You know that, Griff.
I know, Nia, but someone could easily kill you in your sleep on the road, when you have no one to watch your back, I retorted, as my imagination and experience from my own trip combined into a million nightmare scenarios.
Or they could kidnap you or rob you, or hell, all three. You can't very well burn them to a crisp or crush them with a rock when you're fast asleep.
Griff!
I reached over the table and grabbed her hand.
What if something happened to you? What would that do to your father? The rest of your family? What about me?
What about you?
she asked, and her eyes opened wide.
Yeah.
I held her gaze for a long time, and she squirmed under the scrutiny of my eyes. Her face flushed brightly as she looked at my hand over hers. Her breath hitched in her throat as emotions plainly whirled in her mind and in her heart.
I...
she began, then gulped.
I was angry. I know what I did was foolish. I just cannot stay there, and Father's airship pilots wouldn't take me.
Her eyes fixed on her hands. She laced her fingers through mine, and slowly, a warm smile dawned across her face.
I really missed you, farm boy.
It was my turn to turn three shades of scarlet. I smiled brightly. I missed you too, Nia. The memory of our last meeting before the break hung in the air over us. Of our kiss, and the promise of more in the future. We smiled at each other for a few seconds. Then Nia seemed to remember that we were surrounded by our entire school, as she pulled her hand back to her side, her cheeks furiously red.
So, enough about my dreary holiday,
Nia said as she shifted to a new topic.
How was your break?
I kept smiling. Oh, do I have a tale to tell you? And so I regaled her with all that had happened over the break, from the many fun nights in taverns with my friends, to the bandit encounter with Maelor and Syra, to the wilderness rift we stumbled upon. I felt like I talked for an hour, and she smiled throughout, her interest obvious. Once I was finished, we both sat back. We finished our meal during my story, and my ale was unfortunately empty.
Wow, Nia exclaimed. That was much more exciting than my trip was.
Well, it was stressful, and I nearly died, I began seriously, before a smile crept across my face. But yeah, exciting is a word that you could use to describe it. Nia laughed.
You know what I mean.
I smirked. Yeah, I do.
And you were worried about me getting hurt,
she said with a raised brow and a smirk. Hey, I put my hands up in defense. I was awake and able to defend myself, and I had Layla and Brayden to look after me. Plus, we stayed in inns every night. She snorted.
I stayed in inns, too.
Yeah, but every night?
No. But most nights.
I smiled. My point is made.
You're impossible, Griff.
She grunted and rolled her eyes, but there was a smile throughout that made my heart race. With a chuckle, she stood and picked up her tray and glass.
I desperately need a bath.
Yeah, I reckon I do too, I replied and stood. Nia gave me a sly look.
You know you're not allowed to join me, right?
I know. I gave her a mischievous grin and a wink. Too bad, though. Her face turned a bright shade of red as she averted her eyes and turned away from me. I went with her to put up our dirty trays and glasses. The dining hall was mostly empty now, though a few stragglers remained. I couldn't spy Layla or Brayden, so they must have gone already. Time sure flew when I was with Nia. After we left the dining hall, I walked her back to the dorms. When we stopped in front of her dorm, she paused on the steps and looked back at me.
Come find me later,
she told me, her normally cool and reserved face surprisingly bashful.
I'd like to spend some more time with you.
Of course, I replied as my heart thudded loudly in my chest as the possible implications of her words sank in. She smiled.
Good. See you then.
She ascended the steps of her building, pulled the door open, and was about to disappear inside when I called after her. Hey, hold on a second. She looked back at me with a questioning look.
Yes?
Which room is yours? Her face pinched as if she was wondering why I would ask that. Then it cleared as she understood.
Oh, sorry, my mistake. Room 311, top floor.
Great, I waved. I'll see you later then. Her smile was radiant. She giggled, which was a sound I was sure I'd never heard her make. It was magical.
See you, Griff,
she went inside. Damn, I said aloud with a wide smile. I couldn't wait for later tonight. I found Brayden in our room, mostly unpacked. He had his toiletry bag and a bundle of towels under his arm. You coming to the bathhouse? He asked me, and when I nodded, he stopped and looked at me. Want me to wait?
Go ahead. I shook my head. I'll catch up after I get my stuff.
Brayden gave me a thumbs up. Though we'd bathed plenty throughout the break, most of the ends couldn't get hot water. So it was a pleasure to once again have a nice, long, warm bath. I felt like I had shed a whole layer of skin from all the dirt and grime that had accumulated. Truthfully, Brayden tried to speak to me on our way back, but my mind was focused on what was ahead. As soon as we were back in the room and dressed, I turned right back around and left before Brayden could even ask a question. Clean, refreshed, and ready, I walked back to the female dorm. I found the stairwell quickly and took them two at a time to the third and top floor. At the top, I followed the numbered doors down another hall until I found room 311. As I licked my lips and tried to calm my rapid heart, I took a deep, centering breath, then knocked. A moment later, the door swung open to reveal the beauty that was Nia Kinnifick. Her ashen hair was washed and still damp, like sterling platinum in the hall light. Her skin was glowing, and that look of fatigue was gone. All she had on, from what I could tell, was her bathrobe, tied tightly around her waist. A flush came to her cheeks as she smiled brilliantly.
"Hey there, farm boy,"
I grinned. "Hey, feeling better?"
"I'm about to be."
And then she grabbed my face in both hands and pulled me to her into the room. Her lips suddenly on mine, and voracious in their desire. This was not what I'd expected. Welcome, but unexpected. Romantically, Nia had been shy and reserved before, but now she was more than eager, and I was more than willing. We melted together, our kiss hot and hungry, as our tongues danced with each other. She moaned through her kiss, which sent a vibration through me. I pulled back for only a moment. "I guess your roommate isn't here yet?" That's when I got a look at her room. The women's dorms had nicer rooms than the men's typically, but this was ridiculous. A king-sized four-poster bed with an intricately carved headboard dominated the room. A massive dresser filled one wall, flanked by a writing desk and a lounge chair. They were all made of mahogany, and the chair was stitched with rich green leather. The sheets on the bed looked like satin and very expensive.
"I don't have a roommate," she stated plainly. "My father wouldn't allow it, which is fine, I suppose. I don't get along well living with people I don't know."
I whistled. "Lucky you," she smiled seductively.
"It simply means that no one will interrupt us."
Her lips were on mine once again, and then she threw me onto the bed, something I was more than happy to go along with. Oh, yes. The sheets were satin and felt amazing. As I edged up on my elbows to look at her, Nia undid her robe and let it fall to her feet. My jaw practically fell from my skull. I'd known that she had a good body from the many training exercises and sparring matches we went through together, but none of those memories did her justice. She was all curves and immaculate skin, pert breasts, and lean muscle. She was like a sculpture, a work of art, perfect in every way. She blushed as my eyes traveled the length of her.
"What do you think?"
she asked. "I think that if I die tonight," I stated with utter honesty, "I'll die the luckiest and happiest man on this earth." Nia laughed fully.
"I would hate for your death to be on my conscience."
I pushed off the bed and took her into my arms. I let my hands travel down her back and cradle her large, round ass. It would be worth it. I kissed her again and again. I kissed her all along her body, down her neck, her breasts, which were just amazing. She moaned all the while, her breaths getting faster. I maneuvered her around so that she sat on the bed. Then I stepped back and pulled my shirt off, followed by my trousers. I should have just worn my robes, too. Once I was fully bared, Nia's eyes went wide.
"Wow, I had no idea you were so physically gifted."
I smirked and cocked an eyebrow.
"You're telling me you never noticed when we would spar together?"
She rolled her eyes, her cheeks a cheery red.
"I've sparred with many men over many years. I try not to notice those sort of things."
I shrugged and padded up to her.
"Works better as a surprise, I suppose." "Makes this better."
"Yes. Yes, it does."
She laid down amidst her sheets, head on her mess of pillows, arms over her head. I crawled atop her, kissing her all over, her breasts, stomach, hips, thighs, circling my target, before I finally kissed her there, too. She moaned loudly and tangled her slender fingers through my hair. Her body pulsed with each kiss.
Meka!
Her voice alone was like an aphrodisiac and made me hard as steel. After several tender minutes of that, I broke off and kissed my way up her body until I kissed her neck and nibbled on her earlobes, her nails trailing down my back and giving me goosebumps. I kissed her jaw, then her cheek, and finally her lips once again.
Griff, I'm ready.
She took a deep breath while she stroked my cock with one hand.
You're ready?
I teased.
What do you mean by that, Nia?
I mean, I want you inside me.
She reached down and rubbed herself.
Please.
Well, if you insist, I said with a smile as I rubbed my penis along her slick folds.
She moaned as she tried to thrust her hips up and force me deep inside her, but I moved back a bit and teased her some more.
Griff, can you please fuck me?
Her eyes were filled with lust as she stared up at me.
No more teasing. Please.
Instead of responding, I pushed my cock inside of her. The feeling took my breath away, and as I moaned, she cried out and wrapped her legs around me, pulling me deeper still. Then she kissed me, and we tasted each other. I couldn't help but think of myself as being the luckiest man in the world.
If you enjoyed this audio production of Summoner, Book 2, by Eric Vall, or would like to discover other audiobooks narrated by Joshua Story, log on to audible.com, and please, leave a review. This has been Summoner, Book 2. Written by Eric Vall. Performed by Joshua Story. Copyright 2018 by Eric Vall. Production copyright 2018 by Eric Vall.
Audible hopes you have enjoyed this program.